Eureka! You found us! Welcome to the Check Out California Radio Show, your key to California hospitality. Hosted by Rad Gantos, principal of Rad Gantos & Associates, a hospitality and commercial real estate design firm. And Craig Sullivan, chief development officer of Broughton Hotels, a boutique hotel management company. Check Out California is focused on our state's hospitality, travel, and tourism markets, and on the large part they play in California's vibrant and innovative economic diversity and unique quality of life. Now, here are your hosts, Rad Gantos and Craig Sullivan.
Good afternoon, Paul.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hello, Craig.
Good afternoon, Rod. Good afternoon, Paul.
Is it time to check out California?
It is time to check out California. Thank you for joining us today. We've got a very special guest. We've got Bruce Ford, Senior Vice President of Lodging Econometrics, an old friend, a great supporter of the California Lodging Investment Conference and of this show. So, Bruce, welcome.
Good afternoon from the East Coast, gentlemen.
How are you, Bruce? Good, good.
It's wonderful to be here. Thank you so much for the invitation.
It is our pleasure, my friend. I just want to do a little bit of housekeeping here before we get started. If anybody is joining us on octalkradio.net, you can click the Listen Live button and you can listen to us audio, or you can see us on YouTube station for OC Talk Radio or the Check Out California page on Facebook. Let us know what you think. If you have any questions for any of us or Bruce while we're going through this, and the show is primarily California hospitality focused, but as we all know, the industry is very interconnected. So Bruce is joining us from the East Coast to share some wisdoms and his perspective.
Where in the East Coast is he calling from?
Where are you calling from, Bruce?
Well, I live about 50 miles north of Boston, Massachusetts, Portsmouth, New Hampshire.
So you're not in the eye of the storm yet here.
I am not, but we did experience quite a rainy day today, first one in 10, so
wow.
We did have a rain day today, so.
Hey, Bruce, why don't you give everybody a Reader's Digest synopsis on Lodging Econometrics and your role with the company, please?
Sure. So for the last 20 years, Lodging Econometrics has been tracking hotel real estate developments, renovations, and conversions at existing hotels, as well as hotel transactions across the world. And about 10 years ago, we started our global database, so we can now talk about hotel construction, renovation, and conversion projects anywhere around the world. We have about 25 people that do research at the company. We host the data all online in an online secure database at lodgingeconometrics.com. I was the first sales guy for the company 20 years ago, and today I am Senior Vice President of Sales, Director of Global Business Development, so I put a lot of miles on Delta Airlines seat 3B, and I enjoy that thoroughly.
Very good.
So I come today with some statistics that are all the numbers we talk about today. We aggregate the actual records in our database and can talk in great detail, and I think we will, on more than a few projects happening in California. But the idea today is to help everybody kind of understand a little bit of the cyclicality mm-hmm. of the hotel business, mm-hmm. How that affects California, kind of comparing California in this cycle to maybe the last one that went from 2003 to 2009, and talk a little bit about what may happen in several markets for the next couple of years.
How long has this level of sophistication in data gathering been going on, Bruce, for this industry?
Well, when we first started doing it, we were working with PricewaterhouseCoopers back in the day, and they were using what is called FW Dodge McGraw-Hill construction mm-hmm. data, which is a very commercial-centric database, talks about square feet, not hotel rooms. Mm-hmm. And they were aggregating the information on square feet and basically had developed a model that said about 630 square feet per building would be give you about a number for hotel rooms. And we thought, geez, that's not really very accurate. That doesn't seem to be
not quite
the way we need to go forward.
Right.
And the other challenge was that was you know, in the middle 90s, we had quite a proliferation of brands at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Also a proliferation of new public hotel companies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So there was a new vigor for better detail and better information. And we published for the first time, which was then Deutsche Bank. We published our top 25 market analysis, and we've been tracking the business ever since. And we really work with a lot of different types of companies, not just your typical franchise company, but your smaller market owners,
mm-hmm.
you know, your mid-sized owners, your developers, your product suppliers, and of the like as well.
So how just to kind of brag about California here a minute, how important is the California market?
Well, that's an interesting one because it only trails Texas in terms of the number of rooms and the number of projects in the new construction pipeline. And what's really compelling about California these days is you kind of got passed over in the last new construction cycle, mostly because you suffered from really a down cycle on Asia travel to the west coast of the United States after 9/11.
Yeah.
And so San Francisco was in deep recession for quite a while.
Yes, it was.
Silicon Valley was in bad shape. And then, of course, the banking crisis really crushed all mm-hmm. dreams of development. And that was, you know, an external economic event, both of those really, that set California back pretty far. It's not to say that we wouldn't have another external economic event that may happen, but today I think with the low interest rates and 7 or 8 years of very positive operating performance around the country, not just in markets in California, but in a lot of places, that has really spurned some development. And you probably see more cranes building hotels today than in your lifetime in California.
California, yeah.
Reporting now 486 hotel projects with 67,794 rooms in the pipeline. And again, that's second only to Texas, which has about 79,000 guest rooms in the pipeline.
So how many rooms is that again, Bruce?
In California today, 67,794 rooms in the new construction
67,000.
pipeline.
900.
Nine, yeah.
Yep. New rooms coming online.
Between now and 2021?
Some 2022s in there. And again, when we say it's in the pipeline, it's verified, it's got land under control that the developer has control or option
right.
on, and it's going forward in the local public marketplace, and we can verify it in more than one place. So it really is, quote, projects that are in the active pipeline. Not every single one of these is going to happen.
Right.
Okay? We could have an event that stops some things. But certainly, you know, as we have discussed, there is a lot of activity that's already in the ground. And today, if you were to start a new hotel today in California, and you were going to build the average size of a hotel in California today, which is about 139 rooms in the pipeline, that's probably going to take you close to 18 months to construct. So a hotel starting today is really not even an opening until 2019.
Right. Yeah. But that is, again, for people who don't know, that's a typical build cycle.
It is.
It certainly is.
Yeah. Right. And so that's pretty quick because I think there's a misnomer that sometimes these projects are so far in advance that, you know, they're approved and it takes forever to get them off the ground, and that may be the case in some cases. But they're pretty receptive, I should say, reflective of the market, right? They're pretty responsive to current needs, would you say that? I mean, how much advanced planning goes into these new project properties?
Well, I would separate that question into two answers. Right, the first one being if you're in suburbia along the highway and you're building a prototype hotel, you may only go through 6 months of planning.
Okay.
And then you can begin. If you're going into an area around LA Live, you may be subjected to 2+ years of planning and working with the city to get final approvals. And then you have a construction cycle that will probably last 30 to 40% longer mm-hmm. in an urban center simply because you're building a high-rise.
So it's the logistics and the zoning and municipalities, the process, basically.
That's absolutely. The difference from, you know, a suburban site, you can bring a lot of the materials to the site, sure. store them on the site. In an urban site, you must do on-time delivery. So that has led to some modular construction in some cities, although we haven't seen much of it in Los Angeles because of the earthquake requirements.
You've also got the Coastal Commission, and that's another monkey wrench that could, you know, add another year plus. I mean, that's where you usually, you know, dual track everything going through the city and Coastal Commission at the same time.
Sure.
You know, I mean, you look at, you know, Terranea, it's a beautiful resort, and, you know, I refer to it as the last resort. I think it's the last one I'm going to see, certainly in my lifetime, that's built in California mm-hmm. of that magnitude. It took them over 20 years. Mm-hmm. You know, it was the old Marineland site, and I still maintain to this day, and Bruce, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the Baltimore Colts got their idea to move in the middle of the night from the guys at Marineland when they took all the animals down to SeaWorld. But if you look at it, ULI, the Urban Land Institute, did a case study year one or two that the hotel had opened. I was privileged enough to attend that. And these guys had every imaginable problem. The Casitas's actually got turned into a fractional because of the Coastal Commission. They weren't going to allow people to live there more than 28 days. Mm-hmm. Changed the whole dynamics. Their lender was one of the first lenders in the financial meltdown that went away. They got one draw, and they're under construction.
Wow.
I mean, it was, you know, it's a remarkable piece of property, but you're never going to see anything like that in California again. Never. It's just too intense.
Well, having been there a few times and having even brought Mrs. Ford to the Terranea, I can tell you for sure that it is one of the great sites in Southern California.
It is. It truly is. It's if anybody out there gets a chance to stay there, do it. And I highly suggest Sunset Cocktails at Nelson's. So,
well, and recommend the Sunrise Yoga.
There you go.
So Sunset Cocktails and Sunrise Yoga. Or in the other order, whichever your preference is. Yeah. But let's give people a reference to where this property is. It's in
Palos Verdes Peninsula.
It's at the end of Palos Verdes.
Yeah.
And so in its own geographic location is very unique.
Very unique.
And then the property itself is extremely unique.
Yes.
And yeah, I agree. I think it was a very adventurous, ambitious project. And, man, I did not know that their financing was... They only got one draw on that thing. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
You can imagine the people pulling their hairs on that one.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, wow.
Absolutely.
So there is definitely, you know, again, this industry is fraught with uncertainties.
Certainly, and it's highly cyclical. There were a couple more facts statewide that would help, I think, on the Terranea-type projects. So California has the highest rate of full-service development. That would be for the luxury and upper upscale developments if people are industry people. For those not industry people, large 4- and 5-star hotels.
Mm-hmm.
California has the highest percentage of their pipeline in those two chain scales of any state in the country. That is a direct result of much of the urban development that's occurring. But, Craig, we could talk about a few resort properties that are being built because there are a few, but they don't have quite that oceanfront location. They have a view onto the ocean.
So what are some of those properties, Bruce?
Well, we will have a new Rosewood property in Miramar Beach in Santa Barbara that is well under construction that will open next year.
Okay.
That's 170 unit, will be very much a 4.5, if not a 5-diamond property. There are some new resorts in Napa that are being built on the smaller side. Okay, there is a new property in Santa Barbara called the Hotel Californian that will be 123 unit that will be a preferred hotel and resort as well. So we're not devoid of new resorts or oceanfront, if you will, but we could also move out towards Palm Springs, and we'd be talking about some new resorts out there as well.
Interesting.
So resort development in California is alive again, I would certainly say that, and not quite bustling, but definitely alive.
Well, and to both of your point is that the definition of the word resort that we may be not the same as it referred to 10 years ago, that the definition of what is a resort in terms of scale, size, amenities, how it's positioned may be different today, right? Reflecting today's kind of needs and desires and market realities.
For sure. You know, I think resorts in many cases that were built 40, 50 years ago, even 30 years ago, if it wasn't in line to be a five-star resort, it sat just below that. And I think today we have certainly expanded that idea. I think many of the upper upscale hotel brands can deliver a nice four-star experience in a resort today. And even just talking about the different styling, you know, if you look out in Palm Springs many years ago, that was more of the casita-style resort that was developed. Many, many buildings within the property, two or three units in each building surrounded by a pool, offered more reclusiveness and privacy in the resort kind of environment, whereas a branded property, you could just take the Champions, the Hyatt Champions in Palm Springs versus, say, the La Costa Resort. Very, very different properties. Completely different.
Very different, yes.
Right.
But both offering something for each different type of guest and what you're kind of looking for. And there's beauty and architecture in both, but certainly having more historic value, I think, in a place like La Costa.
So here's an interesting question for me, because, I mean, the state of California is just very multifaceted, right? I mean, the regions in the state of California, they almost have their own individual identity, whether it's the Bay Area or the desert, and then there's sub-markets to that. So is this a unique condition to as far as California and the nation, or are there other places that have similar sort of diversity, if you will, and in the same token, opportunities for...
Well, I think the one thing that California has is obviously the amount of coastline it has certainly offers it more opportunity for that than any other state. You do have inland resort locations and you have coastal resort locations, which is not too common. Probably the next closest to that, you know, it would be maybe some places in the Great Lakes or in Florida where you have, you know, Orlando, which is very obviously center of the state versus the ocean front of maybe more Fort Lauderdale and Miami and West Palm Beach and Naples and that kind of thing. But, you know, it's got that unique aspect that not many other places have. I think, secondly, California draws, from a tourism perspective, really the whole state draws more tourism from international arrivals almost than any other place in the country. I don't have the numbers straight in front of me. I know from a city perspective, California has two of the top six. I'm not sure if that adds up, the whole state gets more than any other state, but I think it's pretty darn close. And the draw of that is, in fact, that deep, different urbanism that you have and that deep, different resort style that you have. You can almost see all different types of lifestyle in America within that one state. Take it a long time, but you could...
No, it's true. It's true. And it's funny because the image that we put out to the world, that brand of California, tends to be a little bit less diverse in terms of what we present. You know, there's that quintessential beach town, you know, endless summer kind of thing. But it is fascinating to me just how much diversity for us in California. If you know your way around, you can spend one weekend in a different environment completely from the following weekend.
Absolutely.
And so forth and so on.
Absolutely.
Sometimes that kind of gets lost. It's interesting. We're going to take a break, Bruce, and we'll be back. I do want to talk a little bit more about your numbers. It's fascinating that you guys break it down to such a level, and I can only imagine in an increasingly competitive market with so much diversity how important those numbers get.
Hey, Bruce, when we come back from the break, let's start in San Francisco and work our way down to San Diego, if you don't mind.
Sounds good. Sounds great.
We'll be right back.
Thank you.
use the Premier Rewards Gold Card from American Express, the rewards points can keep on multiplying. Buy three with triple points on airfare. Buy two with double points on gas and groceries. And a single point for pretty much every other dollar you spend on the card. Then, start choosing from over a million rewards to redeem all those points. Apply today and the annual fee for the first year is on us. Call 1-800-AXP-GOLD or visit AXPGold.com. The annual fee for the card is $175. See terms, conditions, and restrictions at AXPGold.com.
Imagine what it would feel like to lose everything. Your job, your home, your family, your dignity. This has happened to thousands of the men, women, veterans, and young adults we serve at Working Wardrobes. What do we do to help? We provide career development services, life skills workshops, job skills training. We provide the perfect interview outfit, and we get clients placed in jobs. Call Working Wardrobes, 714-210-2460. Donate, volunteer, invest, hire.
So we are back with Check Out California, Rod Gantis and Craig Sullivan. We have a great guest here today, Bruce Ford, Vice President of
Lodging Econometrics.
Thank you, Craig. And Bruce, hi, welcome back.
He's actually a Senior Vice President.
Oh, Senior Vice President, excuse me.
Yeah, it's okay.
Does that make him just an older Vice President?
Well, I have a baby boomer show before.
So, I have gray in my beard, I can say that.
That's just seasoning, Bruce. We all do.
It does indeed.
So before we went...
We wanted to talk a little bit about San Francisco, right?
And, yeah, please.
So some of the things we were talking about in San Francisco definitely apply to some of the tenants of the California hotel real estate market that we talked about before our first break, which was that California kind of missed the last new construction cycle. As you know, San Francisco was highly affected by 9/11. The international arrivals really crushed the economy in that town. And so we're really seeing some of our first hotel openings and some of our first significant construction in town. And I was paging through some of the projects in the downtown urban center to kind of understand a little bit about the cost of development, because that has been one of the things that has really slowed the new construction wave into San Francisco. Certainly there's been some trading of hotels, but the cost of development is almost prohibitive in San Francisco. And so we were kind of looking to talk a little bit about what types of developments were there in the ground today. And as you probably would guess, in the hotel business, if you're going to launch a brand in the United States, one of the first things you want to do is say, I want to be in these five or six or seven handful of cities, if you will. And one of those projects that we're going to get here is a new Virgin Hotel in San Francisco. And this project is scheduled to open before the end of the year, and this will be actually the second Virgin Hotel in the United States that will open, and this will be at 254th Street. It is nearly complete, but has not opened yet. But I think we will be talking about this shortly. And this is going to be in the Virgin format, similar to what is open in Chicago. We will have a rooftop bar. We have a 120-foot-tall building and about 4,000 square feet of commercial space on the ground floor. So this property is nearly complete, and it will be a Virgin-operated hotel and be the second one we see in the United States.
That's going to be fun to see. Hey, Bruce, you know, we were talking earlier, and, you know, I had mentioned to you that, you know, my feeling was that San Francisco, to build a hotel up there, you're looking at $1 million-plus per key. So, you know, this Virgin's going to come in at, you know, at that or higher. I mean, they've got to have the big wow factor, and you know, this will be their first one on the West Coast, and it's got to have a high impact. What are you thinking that the construction costs are on this particular hotel? And you still agree with the $1 million a key up in San Francisco, or do you think it's moved north of that?
Well, the best I can tell for this hotel, we are going to be very, very close to that $1 million a guest room. What I don't know on this particular property, Craig, is quite what the land deal is. I assume it's not an owned piece of land, but the lease price on that land, I'm sure, would put the development cost north of $1 million.
Sure.
But the Virgin property, you know, comes in at an upscale level,
right?
Not luxury, okay? Virgin is kind of a lifestyle brand that would fall into that 3.5 to pushing a 4-star level. It would be comparable to other lifestyle brands that are out there, and I'm saying Indigo being one of those kind of lifestyle brands, where we have a new one of those in Los Angeles.
And we stayed at it now.
And we did.
We were there for the Hotel ROI conference.
Offering nice accommodations, but not overly luxurious accommodations. More modest. So you would think that, you know, that there's a saying in the hotel business that if you are developing a hotel, you take the cost to develop per room, and you slice the last 3 zeros off, and that's what you have to charge a night.
Your average daily rate, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Right.
I hear that every other day at work.
So that will probably work a little bit different in San Francisco because it is such a high occupancy market.
Right.
So, as a, you know, that formula works well when you're doing the break-even occupancy at 55%.
Right.
San Francisco averages well into the 80s. So, you know, I think that formula is a little bit tilted for this project, but obviously if you're building a Virgin Hotel in the middle of San Francisco, you're making a very long-term real estate play.
Yeah.
And if you are to sell it anytime in the first 6, 7, 8 years, you are selling a lot of future opportunity with that, because that's the kind of brand that isn't going to go away.
Right.
Different from, you know, any other type of my first or second location where I've never been to America before, where I have more possibility of failure, if you will.
Now, with Virgin, they're playing into that hip, chic, cool, you know, kind of W,
urban,
kind of indigo,
sophisticated.
Urban, sophisticated. Are they also playing it up to the millennials?
Sure. 100%. That's the rooftop bar right there.
There you go.
What Virgin is going to do with their location is they're going to have probably 3 to 4 different ways you can eat and drink on the property, and they will operate none of it. Okay?
Right.
It will all be leased, and it will all be direct revenue to the hotel, and without the operational expense.
Right.
So, that's also a boutique and a millennial model, too, that we've seen in other places as well. There are people that are better that are operating those types of scenarios, and we see those on shared site developments and urban centers where they bring in the restaurateur to operate the restaurant and to give it some more flair. Because we all know that food and beverage in a hotel 15 years ago was, you know, a dead end. It was a money loser.
It was a loss leader,
Well, it's a way also to position your property. If you've got a named chef, your up-and-coming talent, or, you know, something that is local flavor, you know, it's a way to kind of cross-brand and bring in that draw, and especially if it's something that's basically already got a built-in appeal with millennials, then you're bringing in that sort of book of business.
Yeah. That's
absolutely
a double-edged sword, though. You know, I've been involved with hotels, one in this state that will remain nameless, that we had a name company that did the lobby bar and had a whole scene and thousands of people in the Rolodex, and they ended up having to terminate their contract because it just got to be such a mess. Broughton Hotels hired away one of the top executives at L.A. Live, and we had him as a guest, and Weston was, he's now the GM of the hotel they've got under construction, the Park James up in Menlo Park, and he's creating a restaurant there, and he's got the next up-and-coming chef, and, you know, he's doing the whole development thing up there, and he's doing an outstanding job for that company.
Well, and I think it depends on the market, Greg, but, I mean, I went to the new Waldorf Astoria in Beverly Hills the other day, and walked through the lobby, and it was dead. I went to the restaurant. It was semi-okay. Now, granted, it was a weekday.
Yeah.
Went up to the roof deck. It was packed.
Packed, yeah.
Packed.
Yeah.
absolutely packed in the middle of the week.
Week, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I mean, I think it was, if I'm not mistaken, I think it was like a Tuesday night, and there was not one seat to be had. And downstairs, it was almost like you could shoot a gun through the lobby, and there was nobody in the lobby.
So that's one of the other aspects, and I think we've all seen this in city centers. When you have a lovely day in an urban center that turns into a beautiful evening,
yeah,
those places you could charge double,
yes,
what you have on the menu,
yeah,
and you're still going to fill the place, and it's still going to be oversold,
right,
and you're still going to be taking names at the door. That's just the way it works when you have a popular spot. You can't build them big enough. But we can't, of course, build spaces in a hotel for demand for 60 nights a year. It has to work for 365 nights a year.
Right.
And just using New York, many of the rooftops in New York now have developed that kind of like a capsule on top of the building, yeah, whereby they can have that somewhat semi-permanent cover, if
right,
you will, so they can get 10 months a year.
You're out of it.
Yeah. You know what, Bruce? It kind of almost reminds me of the old Hyatt formula with the restaurant at the top.
Yeah.
You know, there was always
dating sort of, yourself. Be careful.
Yeah, it's okay. All right, it's okay. You know, I like it like I told Bruce, the gray in my beard is seasoning, and we charge extra for that, right? Greg, Paul here actually had a question, and I kind of asked you about this a little earlier. It's interesting what you just said, because, yes, you have to make the hotel property,
right,
and all the investment in real estate as far as functionality and what you're putting the money towards work 365 days a year. So how do you do that? How do you plan for that when you open 18 months in the future, when you've gone
24,
through
24, 36?
Yeah, when you've gone through 2 years of approval process, and you know, I mean, there's some adjustment that I understand happens along the way in terms of programming, but you're committing to certain square footages, you're committing to some certain back of house amenities. You know, who decides that? Is that a corporate decision? Is that a team? That decision per project, how does that get filtered out, Bruce?
Well, I'm sure Craig would have something to say about this too, but I would.
That's why I asked you. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
I'm only the co-host, so.
But I would say, you know,
it's
a different story today with social media than it maybe even was 10 years ago, maybe 15 years ago.
Yep.
The buzz that you have to create has to come from the locals, okay? People aren't flying to your hotel to go to your rooftop bar, okay? You will have guests that will come across it. You will have guests that will come to the hotel to stay for events and enjoy it. But that buzz has to come locally. So if you're doing it in downtown Los Angeles, typically the way most people would do that would be to hire somebody who has done it and or hire somebody who has the contact.
Right.
And that person brings the buzz, okay? And that can be at the general manager level. That can be at the social media marketing level. That can be at the entertainment level, if you will, with the DJ and the whatever it is you're doing. In some cases, that can be at the leased restaurant or bar management level as well. So those types of things at the top of the building have got to be able to mesh together. And to do it locally, it's got to work locally, which is, I think, what Craig was talking about a little bit earlier with the restaurant concept. That's also got to be the case, too.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I kind of set you up a little bit with that question, only because Greg and I talk about this all the time, that even though it is a hotel building, it is a hotel property, you are very much in a competitive cycle with other offerings in the immediate area. You may not be for overnight stay, but if you're putting in that money towards that amenity, you're spending that kind of money on the back house kitchen, display kitchen, you know, that upstairs deck, rooftop deck is not cheap to put in.
Not at all.
You know, and the safety factors and everything that goes into that. And so you have to be competitive. You have to be competitive, and not just with other hotel properties. You have to be competitive with every food and beverage that is high-end enough to appeal to your client within the immediate surrounding areas.
Yes. Yep. Hey, Bruce, how many keys do we have opening up in California that are in the pipeline right now?
So for California opening up in 2017, we'll open 12,600 rooms, which would be about a 2.5% increase in statewide supply this year.
The majority of that in L.A. and Orange County?
Certainly a good percentage of it. If I was looking at the majority, I would say no. Because San Francisco will have about 1,600 of those rooms this year. Central Coast of California, about 1,100. LA will have the large majority, about 4,100 of the 12,600 will be in Los Angeles area.
And roughly 1,400 of those rooms opened up already this year between two hotels, the Intercon what's the other one? The other IHG.
We've had quite a few hotels.
Indigo.
Yeah, Rad mentioned the Waldorf as well.
Yeah, that's open as well.
So there's quite a few new properties in Los Angeles that are opening as we speak. And in San Francisco as well. What's, I think, going to be interesting and probably the most comparable thing is if you took the last 2 years for openings, you had 4,100 rooms open statewide in 2015. You had 56 open statewide last year. You'll go to 12,600 this year, just about 12,000 next year, and then maybe as many as 17,000 new rooms statewide in 2019.
Yeah,
with still another 32,000 rooms.
So this is a question to both of you. So where do you see the trend going after 2021 or 2022? Are we going to sustain this kind of growth?
In the hotel business, we always open hotels over the top of the operating cycle. Okay, so we've seen nearly 8 years of operating performance growth nationally. The first 6-7 months of this year have been better than anybody expected, okay? But we're not blowing the doors off as we were. We don't have 6-7% RevPAR growth. We have 2 or 3% RevPAR growth. And we're likely to settle into the 2 or 3 for this year, 2 or 3 for next year. Then we're probably over the top after 2018. Now, that doesn't mean over the top down 10%. It means over the top maybe minus a half a point, minus a point. Hmm. But still pretty robust operating cycle, keeping in mind we're in record territory right now. We've never made more money. We've never had more room night demand. We've never had higher occupancy than we have today. So the conditions are still very good, and we're hoping that we don't see those external economic events that turn it south. But we talked a lot about demand in Southern California. One of the things we want to talk about is the L.A. Convention Center and kind of what that all means.
Absolutely.
All the construction we're seeing down there. But I'll allow Craig to answer on the over the top of the cycle for development.
No, I think you're right on target with that. I think the other thing that's concerning, and this could be our segue into Los Angeles, is between San Francisco with the Moscone Center being closed and Los Angeles with what's going on downtown, you're also seeing a lot of added pressure coming from payroll. Not so much the benefit packages, but now it's payroll. City of Los Angeles enacted and basically segregated out the hotel sector from every other part of the service industry to put in a minimum wage. So there's some interesting, unique pressures that are coming from the municipalities.
That are politically driven, basically.
That they are, yes.
I mean, let's just say what it is.
Yeah, right? You got to call it what it is. It is politically driven, and you talk to any of the management companies, any of the brands, this is a big concern, and City of Los Angeles taking it a step farther, and now you bring them your design plans for this hotel, and everything that you've got under the roof has to stay. You cannot all of a sudden decide to remove the laundry and use a contract service. You've got to keep that in there. You've got to keep those people there.
So it's job protection?
Yeah. It's a little bit of job protection. Yeah. A lot of additional costs. So Yeah, I think you know, construction costs, you know, we're probably sitting at you know, minimum of $190 to $220 a square foot for construction costs in the Southland. I think it goes up probably another 30% in the Bay Area and a pure all-union construction projects probably substantially higher as well.
Sure.
You know, the soft costs are going up dramatically. Furniture, FF&E, OS&E, everything's going up. So, yeah, you know, a hiccup here or there, and I think Bruce is right. You know, some of these projects will evaporate. That may not be the best and greatest use of that real estate. You may come back with something else.
You do have questions out there today amongst developers who are funded by private equity. And that private equity is saying is a balancing act that's going to come more into focus in the next 6 to 12 months.
Yeah.
Can I buy cash flow today?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Versus putting it into construction and waiting 2 years for cash flow.
Yeah.
And what does that make? How does that balance out? Because that is legitimately a concern. And in some places, that is a legitimate concern. Different in urban centers, I think. And, you know, when we talk about Los Angeles, you know, it's now been 7 full years since LA Live opened, since the JW and the Ritz-Carlton opened. And it's a little bit longer since Staples opened. But certainly Staples, the Los Angeles Convention Center, the Microsoft Theater, and the LA Live complex, I think, you know, many people looking from the outside would stamp it a success to this point.
Mm-hmm.
But what are the next steps, okay? And one of the things that we know are the next steps is having enough hotel rooms to be able to put together 10,000 room nights a night for a block and being able to host conferences that have 10,000 attendees. That is getting into the major market, the major players, the major cities. You know, this is where, you know, this is why Boston built the 600,000 square foot convention center. This is Jacob Javits territory.
Right, yeah.
You know, where you're looking at the biggest and the best. And we have a great example coming up of that for our annual Los Angeles conference in January of 2018, because the American Heart Association has a conference at the LA Convention Center the same time we're in Los Angeles.
Oh.
And we look small because we're 2,500 or 3,000 people in the
city. Right. Yeah.
But they will be much, much, much bigger than that. And that will put a lot of pressure on the existing lodging in the city. And one of the things we talked about with LA today is that when they have a larger convention, it sheds the demand out further and further and further
right.
from the urban center. And it's not that they can't have a larger convention, it just means people are going to be staying farther away.
Right.
So where we sit today with construction in the LA CBD, and this is non-Beverly Hills number, we have almost 2,600 rooms under construction right now in the LA CBD with another 2,500 ready to go, okay? And if you add in Hollywood and Beverly Hills, you have another 1,300 under construction,
yeah.
There are 1,100 ready to go. So adding those couple of things together, we're going to talk about in downtown L.A., by the time they're done building, okay, we'll have nearly 17,000 rooms just in the CBD of Los Angeles, which will make those 10,000 room block nights much, much easier to swallow.
Got it. Hey, Bruce, we're down to about our last 10 minutes. Let's try and go through Orange County and San Diego.
Absolutely. So we talked a little bit about kind of Disneyland and the remaking. Obviously, Disney is building the new Star Wars land in Orange County, and they're going to be opening that in 2019. So there are now proposed new 2,300 rooms around Disneyland in what would be a market track that is familiar to all of us. But you think about all the hotels that are around Disneyland within a few miles, that's really what we're talking about. And a lot of those are the higher end. There's not many luxury offerings right there. So I would think that most of the things that will open there, for the majority of those rooms will be of a four-star quality and higher, which will really change the lodging market around there quite a bit.
So the days of the mom and pop and independents are coming to an end.
There's certainly people who still want those, okay? But I think, you know, for the travelers and the families these days, I'm thinking, you know, we are seeing new mid-scale brands, though, Craig.
Yeah, we are. I'm looking at one of your reports right now.
Like Tapestry and True by Hilton, and we'll have another new mid-scale brand from IHG here in the very near short term. And, you know, that's a new thing.
Yeah.
That's a new thing. But a lot of the construction going on in the Anaheim area. Also, we have some in Newport Beach and down to Dana Point. We have 11 new projects headed in that direction. Santa Ana and Costa Mesa have several new projects as well. So that market has grown a little bit. We've seen about a 15% growth in the size of the pipeline over the last 12 months.
Yeah.
So if we're continuing to head south to San Diego, currently throughout the San Diego market area, we have 36 projects in the pipeline, 12 of which are in the CBD. San Diego, unlike some of the other cities, did see some new hotel construction in the last cycle, as the Hilton Bayfront would be an example of that, mm-hmm. and Hard Rock would be an example of that. But the reason for that is they built a new ballpark down
there. Right, right, exactly.
In that last cycle. So you saw quite a few new hotels. So you'll see a few more in San Diego right now, I think, really kind of south and east, and then Carlsbad. And Oceanside also have some new projects coming into that area as well. And again, we track all of these details, and I talk in platitudes, longitudes, and latitudes.
Latitudes, yes, you do.
If you need the deets, I'm happy to help anybody out that would be looking for
You know, talking about San Diego and the gas lamp for a second, I was down at the Pendre, and those are some of the guys that were involved with Montage. This is their new creation. And, you know, it's 300 keys. It opened up, I believe, February this year. And they've got six restaurants in this. Three of them are operated by the hotel itself. The other three are operated by the Click Group out of Vegas. Those guys were some of the guys that were over with the Nine Group. And the Click Group has got the third floor pool bar area. They've got a three-meal-a-day restaurant on the ground floor with its own street access. And then they've got a club in the basement that's about another 8,500, 9,000 square feet. And these guys, that bar is open up four nights a week from 10 to a quarter to 2. Thursdays and Fridays are, you know,
wow.
Just incredible amounts of money. Saturdays, you know, these guys are pulling in at least $80,000 a night in food and beverage. And it's a beautiful hotel. Bruce, next time you're in San Diego, you got to stop by there and take a look at it if you haven't. Hey, we've got a lot of your data here. And I wanted to see if we could share that with some of our listeners, if they request that. Would that be okay with you?
Sure. Nothing like a little adverse sideways pressure there.
Well, timing is everything.
You know, Bruce is also one of the original sponsors and friends of the California Lodging Investment Conference, and we're trying to get him out here to participate in that. And Bruce, I want to thank you for everything that you've discussed today and being our guest. And hopefully, if you make it out to Click, we can get you on the show and in the studio as well.
It will be my pleasure. Gentlemen, it really was a great experience. And, of course, ladies and gentlemen, follow Lodging Econometrics on LinkedIn or Lodging Econometrics on Twitter, and you can find anything you'd like to know about the hotel business.
I'm going to spell that for people, Bruce. You kind of beat me to the punch there of how people can get hold of you, but I am going to spell it. So it's Lodging, LODGING, and Econometrics, ECONOMETRICS. Again, Lodging and Econometrics, Mr. Bruce Ford, Sr.,
vice president. And thanks, buddy, for being on the show. I will hold up here for people who are maybe watching this. The data, and this is just a snippet, right? The data is just unbelievably thorough. You gave me kind of chills as a former economics major. You just gave me a little chill there, Bruce, for the data, right? I've been kind of like salivating over here, looking it over, and it's very precise, very broken down. It's very useful. It's amazing that at some point this thing did not exist for this industry as competitive as we keep getting. So please go visit Lodging Econometrics and reach out to us. We'll put it up there. But if you're interested, let us know via email. You can email me at Rod, R-A-A-D, period, Gantus, G-H-A-N-T-O-U-S.
Or you can get a hold of us on the Facebook page.
Or drop us a note on the Checkout California Facebook page. Let us know. And we will be happy to share that and also kind of connect you with Bruce.
Bruce, you are a great friend. I've used your data for years. And, you know, I always make a point to come and see you at the industry conferences. You always have the best information. And, you know, hopefully we can drive a few clients your way as well. So thank you, my friend.
You're only as good as the information you have.
That's it. We're looking forward to seeing
you.
Thank you, Bruce. You too. Stay safe.